my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, all my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Zach Reed, and I have a trading problem.
I am Tommy Blair, and I, too, have a trading problem.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Session 393 of the TradeX Podcast, where even though the network went away, the dap's always here to stay. So drop a dap in the chat or in the comments if you're with us. We appreciate all of you, and gosh dang, it feels good to be back. I am back, rested, relaxed, 2 weeks off. Thank you to John Hogue. Thank you to Russ. Thank you to Rocky. Thank you to Andrew Hall. Thank you to Scott Sidlow, and Zach's making a motion.
Do I get to be the first to officially congratulate you, Frank, on air on yes. the show? Congratulations.
Yes, I am young Frank has grown into a man. I am married now. So it's very exciting. And what's even more exciting, 1 year ago today, not exactly today, I hosted my first show with the two people on this show. And I said, the parents are gone. So it's a house party. So welcome, everybody, to the 2025 TradeX House Party. We have Zach Reed. We have Tommy Blair. Zach, how are you?
It's good. We're renovating the house now, though. That's the house party now. Where bring your hammers. We're fixing things up.
Yes, exactly. And Tommy, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Anytime I can come on Trade Addicts, it's awesome. But I don't love the timing, to be honest with you. You guys brought in a bunch of ringers last week, and now we have to come in.
Literally, show three or something like that was Rocky and Hogue, which is crazy.
I said this when that show got posted last week, like on Blue Sky, where it was like, this is going to be the show this yes. week. Ask questions. And I'm like, how come this wasn't a full 2 week episode, all six, a Royal Rumble, just not even stop the show, just like in and out, let's go. Like, if you got to go to work, that's fine, come back. Like, we yep. should have just run it 2 weeks
because the host was sitting on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could have got to the point where you were back, but you know, I popped in with Fantasy Cares,
yeah,
while I was in Florida. I popped in from the pool at Cabana Bay, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes you gotta make things. Maybe don't do that on your honeymoon. Like, yeah. You don't want to get in trouble that early
on the first week. Yeah,
yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we get into the shenanigans, I've started doing this more and more. So, Zach, what's a guiding principle you have in trading before we kind of get into things?
I think for me, and I probably said something similar on this show before, it is always making sure you look at the other team before you start firing off trades, because they may not need what you have to offer. They may not be in a position to accept the trade that you're throwing out there. And so that's my kind of guiding principle. And it, especially for me, when I receive trades, I can tell if you've looked at my roster. And I don't like to dicker. So if you haven't looked at my roster, there's a real good chance it's going to be a reject, and it's not a personal thing. It's just a, hey, that didn't, you know, make waves in my pool.
Yeah. Given how Tommy basically just fist bumped, I assumed he agrees with that. But what is your principle there, Tommy?
This is what I love about listening to TA every week, is that question comes up very often, right? A guiding principle. And it makes me revisit my own principles. Is this the time of year to develop new principles or incorporate someone yeah. else's? Maybe not, right? Yeah. This is the time of year where you need to use the most efficient, well-worn processes you've got, because let's be honest, y'all, like, holidays are coming. We're all kind of tired of this. This is fun, but we're also kind of tired of this, right? And so what I was going to say is it's not about you. I think that's something that we need to remind ourselves, is that this is typically a 12-person endeavor, right? And to have the lens of what I need or what I am seeking or my strategy is seeing not even 1/12 of the picture. I think we get so egocentric when we play competitive games, when we play these zero-sum type games, we're losing out on all sorts of advantages that we can leverage. And that's something I would love to talk with you about, Frank, and you, Zach, maybe sometime in the non-point scoring season. Like, let's dedicate 20 or 30 minutes to that topic on one of our shows so that we can better understand and communicate how it is once we get to, you know, week 10, week 12, week 14 next year, how we're able to have that natural inclination to look at the perspective of others.
Yeah. This has actually been percolating in the back of my head doing Zach's Royal Rumble style podcast with everyone, like in the non-point scoring season. We just put like 10 brains on a screen and see how, what theories we come up with. So that could be fun. All right, let's get into the news. I bucketed the first couple. So Jets issues and Falcons issues. So Jets issues, Fields got benched again. Tyrod will start this week. And Garrett Wilson to IR. This happened before the Patriots game. So he has three games left. And Aaron Glenn said they expect Wilson to play again this season. But as I put in the notes, like, let's be real. They're two and something, and they're kind of done for the season. Why rush him back? So Tommy, we'll start with you. As you look at the Jets going forward, and we have a question on this later, what do you do now that Tyrod's in at the helm? Is it better? Is it the same? Is it worse? What are you doing?
I think it's probably the same. This is the first time in Justin Fields' entire dynasty lifespan that I've maybe been interested in him, because nobody else seems to be, right? They've finally given up the diehards. They're done with him. And so now he's firmly in backup quarterback territory. And what is he as a backup quarterback? He's an elite option, right? And so I really am interested now in acquiring Justin Fields as other people are abandoning ship. He is a dented can, and I really like dented cans. You look at someone like Garrett Wilson. I did a study last year looking at rookies who were playoff bound in the NFL, right? And what their KTC values did in the playoffs, whether they were performing, whether they were active, whether they were on IR, every single one of them gained value. Garrett Wilson to me feels like one of those shifting quicksand type profiles where it might be a good time to get out on him right now and get into maybe a rookie that's valued slightly less than him, or a second year player who's valued slightly less than him, knowing like, their team is playoff bound and they're going to have that spotlight on them, and maybe trade Garrett Wilson at a loss right now, knowing that in January, February, you're actually going to be gaining. Zach, what do you think about that strategy?
And so I love that. I love the idea of getting out of Wilson, of getting something that can be an appreciating asset, but also keep in mind, once you get into that January, February, March, when you're in the non-point scoring season, people are going to remember Garrett Wilson had a bad year, which is not true. Garrett Wilson, before he was injured and before Fields went on the fritz, for week 1 through 6, was wide receiver 7 overall.
With like a 40% target share.
He was incredible. And he's been the target monster for his entire career. And so, like, if you're in a league where you have Garrett Wilson, and especially if you're looking at playoffs, I think that's a great idea to get into somebody maybe younger, but definitely somebody producing. But also keep in mind that you can either reacquire him, or if you're in other leagues where, you know, you're skulking around and trying to rebuild your team and trying to make your team better for next year, that's a piece that can actively make your team better, who is going to be undervalued in the offseason, because we have goldfish brains. It's what have you done for me lately? It is the last thing we saw, and the last thing we saw from Garrett Wilson was a goose egg and getting hurt and going on IR and being just embroiled in a bad team that's going nowhere, and that's fine. But that's not the whole story of Garrett Wilson.
Yep. Since we're on the topic, the Jets will probably be near the top. When do you guys start rookie work?
Soon. This weekend. Soon?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. When I finish work on my house. Yeah.
I do my rookie work after Zach releases his rookie guide.
Okay. Because it seems like the whispers are right now that there's a few kind of high-end quarterbacks who are leaning going back. Sellers might go back. Moore might go back. It seems like Mendoza's prize, but
it's kind of it's been the 2027 class for 2 years. Like we've been talking about this since we were talking about the 2025 class being a great running back class.
Yep.
And so the 26 class has always been the, you know, trade out of if you can. If you end up toward the top, it's fine. Like you're gonna end up with a good player if you're in the top two or three, because that's what happens. It's it's just kind of how things shake out. But if you're looking at, and I know I really wish that John was on, because I hear him often say we're not very good at predicting the future, and every now and then I hear you say that, Frank, and I think that is BS. I think that there are some analysts who are great at telling you, Travis May for one.
Yes, we all bow at the altar of Travis May.
But
yes.
there are like four or five people that I listen to that if they say it's going to be a good class in 3 years, I listen.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean that every single player is going to get through. I mean, there's a filter. It's kind of like I remember my dad was a high school baseball coach, and whenever he would have a good incoming freshman class, he would line everybody up and be like, look, I understand that you guys have been great for your whole career. You've been great in junior high. This is high school now. In 4 years, you're already looking at winning championships. But in 4 years, he may be married. He may have moved to Florida. You know, he may have broken his leg. He may have decided he doesn't love baseball. And so this team may not be the team that you end up with. It's the same way with a class in college where, like, you're not necessarily getting the same group of players, the exact players that you think you're getting from, you know, 2020 to 2024 or 2023 to 2027. You're not getting the same group of players, but you can tell that there's a good group of this position, a good group of this position. We're light on this position. So,
yep.
And to me, and I've harped on this forever, but a good class is when you have good, especially in Superflex fantasy, a good class is when you have quarterbacks and then you have another really solid position, because there are going to be dribs and drabs. I mean, this past class, I didn't think was a great class. There was one quarterback that I thought was an NFL quarterback. There was maybe three wide receivers. I thought Travis Hunter was going to be better than he is. I thought Trey Harris was going to put up more than we've seen so far. And we thought, Igbuka is Igbuka. So he's been good. But that's not a great class. That was a great running back class, because I could go 15 deep at running back and still be excited about guys. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily a great class. So if you're building your team, that's one you want to get into when your team is the bull of the woods. It was a contender class where you can go get running backs, or if you're smart like Tommy, you draft running backs and then you shift them and change them and trade them and make your bones that way. But a really good class is a class that has got a top end at quarterback and then at least one other position.
Yep.
And so I don't think 2026 is that.
So here's what I think we know about 2026 right now. Mendoza's going to go early.
I don't know.
So anything. Jeremiah Love's going to be. It's so I actually really compare this to like 2022, right? Fernando Mendoza is better than Malik Willis. We'll stop right there. But Jeremiah Love's kind of the Breece Hall, and then there's a slew of wide receivers, Carnell Tate, Mekhi Lemon, Jordan Tyson. All those guys are going to be kind of filling in the gaps. I don't know if there's any real tight ends, but I think we're staring at 2022, which was very top heavy, but you swung a lot and missed a lot kind of in the back.
I'll send you my parody from 2022 because it was about trading out.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Okay, we can go back to the news. Falcons, Penix season-ending knee injury. Kirk Cousins gets another audition, which let's hope it's better than the last one. Drake London has a sprained PCL. He's out for week 12 and quote unquote potentially longer. I said this is kind of like Garrett Wilson. This feels like a record decision, right? If they're out, they probably sit London a little longer and just see how Kirk does. So I will say this. When Kirk had his bad performance against the Dolphins, he did not have Drake London. So, Zach, we'll start with you this time. What do you think of the Falcons, Kirk Cousins, Drake London?
I don't think it's going to be great, but it's going to be one of those where you have to pepper Bijan behind the line of scrimmage, get the ball out of Cousins' hand quick. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they can figure something out with Pitts. It's not a great situation for Cousins, mm-hmm. not having your best weapon. And so it's kind of incumbent on the Falcons coaching staff to get the ball out quick and put Cousins in a position where he can succeed.
I totally agree, Zach. I think Bijan is the primary beneficiary here, right? We've seen sort of an evolution of his role this season where let's use Tyler Algier in between the tackles. Let's use him to get the difficult yards and to set the tempo of the offense, really. And then let's put Bijan, this incredible athlete, who's also, I mean, he's humongous for his athleticism. Let's put him in unfair matchups in space and not give him those opportunities to, you know, get more injured, right? Like it feels so common sense. And I'm so grateful that the NFL has finally made this decision. We've been talking about this for a couple years now, that this is the shift that needs to happen for bell cow running backs to turn them into these types of weapons on the perimeter. And so I'm really excited about that. I think the real story though is going to be, is this a Darnell Mooney shift or does this target volume maintain for Kyle Pitts? We found a new defined role for Kyle Pitts and it has actually been like a boon for the position, for the tight end position. Kyle Pitts has been a good fantasy asset and a good football player. Has he preserved his role enough with this change in quarterback, someone who struggles to get to the perimeter, right? That's where Kyle Pitts has thrived, is at the perimeter this year. Can he keep his position with a suboptimal situation, or does Darnell Mooney start to eat into that target share? It's a good chance to get into both of them, in my opinion, because people are down on this Falcons offense in general. Bijan is, I mean, he's nearly untouchable. So if you have him, great. You know, this is awesome for the stretch run. But I think there's access to both Mooney and Pitts, Frank. And I think it's probably time to buy both of them.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. People forget last year that Mooney was a wide receiver too, basically at the end of 2024. So he's got value. And I think Cousins obviously trusts him. And I don't really buy much else on the Falcons outside of Pitts. Like I agree that Bijan's going to get his, and it's probably nearly impossible to get him right now. Yeah. But
it probably cements Algier's role a little bit more as well, doesn't it, Zach? I think that if you're someone who hasn't invested heavily in RB and you found yourself competing for a bye, let's say, that's the time to get in, you know, trade a assumed 211 for mm-hmm. Tyler Algier. You have my blessing on this podcast to do so. I think this is the time to hit the gas at the position, and you can do it very cheaply with Algier.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Zach, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he should be the between the tackles grinder. He should get work at the goal line if they happen to get there. Like I agree with that. And I think it's probably some cheap points you could steal. You could steal a week or two with Algier, which would be nice.
Yep. What would you guys trade for Cousins if you had Penix, Stroud, and, you know, the other people who are kind of hurt right now? Second? Ooh. Would you trade a second for Kirk Cousins as a contender? Contender only. I know you're not buying him as a rebuilder, obviously, but like
I feel like you're QB away. I feel like there are other places that I would pivot before I go Cousins. Like I feel like what we've just said is you're gonna have to help Cousins out, you're gonna have to use Algier, you're gonna have to use Bijan in the screen game, get him in space. You're gonna have to hope that he can get the ball to Pitts outside of the numbers. Because that's where Pitts has been operating. So all of those things lead me to be a little leery of Cousins. And I know, like, I know you're talking about a QB2, and I know you're talking about replacing an injured quarterback, but man, there's got to be somebody in your league with like an old quarterback or somebody that they don't, you know, if it's Rodgers, if it's Darnold, if it, you know, somebody,
I mean, Joe Flacco.
But Flacco could be dust in a week or two.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen the way they're losing.
Well, I mean, and I mean, maybe he'll stay, but like, it sounds like Burrow is coming back sooner than later, but like there are options. I mean, there's a chance that even Stafford is on a team in your league that isn't playing well, even though Stafford is playing great. Like there are options that I'd rather go get a Tyrod than I would Cousins, just because I think that, again, the floor with I should say Tyrod, isn't that's his name, Tyrod, not
I think
Tyrod.
So yeah,
so there's a floor with Tyrod Taylor's legs that Cousins just doesn't have. So I don't know, that I wouldn't be real excited about Cousins as a, I mean, if you can get him for, I guess, like a second or like package a third and something, fine, but like, man, I don't know.
Here's what I like about it, Zach, is you can actually reconfigure your roster construction using Cousins as the carrier for that. So you can take one of these wide receivers, you know, these non-difference maker wide receiver 50 types that people see supposed upside in, and you can push them to managers and get that short-term usage, right? You get a little bit of utility. And then come in the non-point scoring season, you have an ability to cut Cousins. You can wait it out, and you can get to your rookie draft, and you can, you know, fill that spot with a running back, right? And you can treat him almost as if he is a running back, or you can hold on to him and see if he becomes a bridge quarterback, right? Going into next year. Let's say he's not horrible. I think that's somewhere in the range of outcomes.
Yeah.
Like a bottom, I don't know, 10 quarterback in the league. And so he could see 4 weeks, right? We see that all the time with this profile where Cousins gets another shot to hold down the fort for incoming rookie Y. And you can trade Cousins for exactly what you bought him for today, right? Yeah. And so there's a lot of no risk opportunities where you're not trading liquid capital to use him right now. And you have no loyalty. I really like that concept because we have too much loyalty at the bottom of our rosters.
Yes.
And this is a chance to say, no, F it. I'm not doing that. This is a position of churn. The last five spots on my roster, I have no affinity towards. And nobody likes Cousins. Why should you? So he can be off your roster in a month, you know?
You're trading for Kirk Cousins and a bottle of Drano so you can clean out the toilet when it clogs.
Exactly.
Saints, Jets over the next 2 weeks. So maybe buy him and then sell him before he plays the Seahawks, Bucks, Cardinals, and Rams to finish out.
Yeah.
So maybe buy him for that.
Murderer's row.
Yeah. He might have 20 points combined over those 4 games. All right. Here we are again. J.K. Dobbins is hurt and he's got a foot issue. He's on IR. They've already said he's out for the season. Like they said, if they make it to the Super Bowl, he can come back. But RJ Harvey looked fine because this happened before last week. One is the Chiefs. Let's give it a second. It's the Chiefs defense. But what do you guys think of how do you guys think Harvey did this week, and what are you doing with it now?
All of you RJ Harvey fans are going to get exactly what you wanted. You're going to see him. You're going to see what he is, who he is, how he is. And I hope that he performs.
Mm-hmm. Does it matter if he performs, Zach? Like, is there enough volume and enough targets to matter? Like, I think he's going to have enough. He's going to reach a minimum threshold where who cares? He blends in with a lot of other useful pieces this time.
McLaughlin played a little too much for my comfort, by the way.
Sure. Well, but he's going to, because I don't think I don't think that Harvey will be trusted with that entire load because he's a rookie. Mm-hmm. And then also, look, RJ Harvey's fine. He was my running back 16 in the class. He was like the last running back that I was excited or had interest in, like the last one. And so for me to see him get 11 carries and have 30 yards and have three receptions, it's not a huge surprise. Like, again, he's going to have a game or two where he's going to be good because he's going to have volume, or at least quite a bit of volume, and that offense will be quasi-functional. Like, that's just kind of how it will be. And so it – yeah, like, again, I hope for all the people who are excited about RJ Harvey that RJ Harvey, like, lights it up. I really do. And that's in the range of outcomes. Like, he's going to have volume, which is what you're chasing with all players, but especially running backs.
If you look at his profile, second round running back, they don't really fail that often. They could be not great, you know? And so if RJ Harvey is good, if he is bad, I don't really care that much this time of year. We're on the precipice of really entirely different considerations. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to crack open the door on that in some of our conversations in these podcasts, where how many weeks are left of meaningful play for your league mates, right? So half of the league is about to get Thanos'd.
Yeah.
And so they should probably be looking forward. But it's also the playoff teams as well. You know, we're going to start to see this attrition happen where, you know, we've got 3-4 meaningful weeks, 5 for some of us. That's not a lot of time. And you don't need a lot of starts. You can patch a couple of lineups together and get through the season pretty effectively this time of year. And so you don't have to suffer from immaculate roster syndrome. Like, just get starts. And well, Harvey is starts right now.
This is the perfect illustration of zero RB, of any fragility, of how, at least I think, all three of us play our bench spots, where you have running backs like RJ Harvey, like Ray Davis, like Ollie Gordon, like, you know, like whoever the running backs are that you have on your roster, because when they get, you know, when they get in the elevator and they have the, you know, the elevator man press the button and they go up to the top floor, they're going to get volume. Devin Singletary was running back 10 last week. Quietly, Kenny Gainwell was running back 5. Like, this is what we do. This is why you play your bench the way you do. And you're not expecting a running back 1 season out of these players. But if you get a running back week, it's worth the roster spot.
Yep.
If you get a couple of top 10 or top 15 weeks, then, man, they have given you more than return on investment.
I think both of you can be right and still be behind where some of the consensus was, because I think people thought RJ Harvey was going to be Peyton's new Kamara. He doesn't run like Kamara. Kamara ran a lot better. And I think people saw Kamara is basically a converted wide receiver, like turned running back, who could catch a lot of passes. Like, go watch Kamara at Tennessee.
Kamara was so much fun. But if I go watch Kamara at Tennessee, I can't watch Kamara because I'm going to watch John Kelly.
Yes, exactly. So I think a lot of people reached for the stars on Kamara or on Harvey. Wow, I even did it. That were disappointed. I agree with you that he's probably going to be fine. You're going to have good weeks, bad weeks. I think his floor is like next to nothing, which is a problem. But
the cool thing though, right now, you're listening to this. It is Wednesday.
Tuesday.
It's going to be Wednesday when they're listening to this.
Yes.
Because Frank turns this around really quick. You, listener of the Trade Addicts podcast, have the ability right now to go trade RJ Harvey while people are looking at him going, he's going to be the starter. Dobbins is now on the shelf. This is RJ Harvey's time, because you know there are at least a couple guys in your league who are big RJ Harvey guys in the rookie draft, and they're still competitive. Mm. And you can squeeze some value out of that if you want to. And if you're competitive, then you do what Tommy said, hang on to him because he's going to get starts and he's going to put up points, and that's great. But like, it's a really cool point. It's an inflection point right now with RJ Harvey, because there's still that dream, mm-hmm. but there's also potential for points. So you get, if you listen to the last time I was on with John and Tommy, you've got the dual point. You've got the dual value going on right now. Because you got points value, but you also have that dream value, that future value. And so, like, you've got an inflection point where you can use RJ Harvey however benefits you, find the trade partner that benefits them also, or hang on to it and roll your league mates.
If you're going to do what Zach said, wait a week. He's on bye. Let the running backs... Let more running backs get hurt because we're on a bad streak right now. So let the contenders panic. And, knock on wood, like nothing can happen to RJ Harvey on his bye, like short of a crazy practice thing. So he's protected for a week. His value's protected. Wait a week. See if someone else goes down and owners start panicking because you might get more. But I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. I don't know if I'd sell him, but I don't know if I like love it either. Laporta put on IR, back injury, no timetable. Woof, the Lions look bad. And by the way, I put this in the news last week and everyone thought I was just kissing Rocky's butt for a second. Like, I said the Eagles D is very legit and plan accordingly. Any transitional pieces, any kind of tier two pieces, you're sitting against the Eagles now. You almost have to.
Yeah.
Because that D is ridiculous. Like, if you have, like, you're obviously starting all your Cowboys this week, but like, those secondary pieces are not who you're playing against the Eagles anymore. Because that D is ridiculous. Any Lions takeaways? Jameson was the only one who looked decent in that game, but I think it's a weird game. They're probably going to drop 50 on the Giants this week to prove to everyone that they're good again. So.
It's just all the tight end injuries this season have my teams are in ruin, various states of ruin.
I built a score taking all of the most predictive metrics for the pass catchers and sort of like smashed them together into a 1 to 10 scale or a 0 to 10 scale. Of the top 10, like 7 of the top performers had a bad week this week. It's kind of a great week to buy elite wide receiver, mm-hmm. in my opinion, coming down the stretch, because you're not going to regret having a Amon-Ra St. Brown in June. He's awesome. Yeah. And so,
which we'll get to, go get him.
I think you send strong offers up and down the top 10 ish wide receivers and you see if you can get a bite. You consolidate into your starting positions in a meaningful way. This is a good week to do that.
Amon-Ra, I like that. I like that because you're right. This is when you start making those moves to go for the title, and going for the big fish. So I like that a lot. Calvin Ridley, broken fibula, out for the season. They have an out after this season, like a team out for like $8 million of dead cap. And he's 32 coming off of injury. So I don't see him on the Titans next year. I don't think, I don't see how he fits with the youth movement they got going on there. Let's do Titans real quick. Do you guys like DK or AO Manor going forward?
No.
Wide receiver to be named later then.
It's interesting. Ownership has changed in Tennessee, right? Mm-hmm. Through inheritance. And this new owner is very hands-on. Mm-hmm. Hands-on owners tend not to let the status quo remain. I think we're in store for a whole lot of churn and turnover and investment and splashy signings and this and that. So, yeah, there could be a cast off of Calvin Ridley, but I think there's going to be a lot of change. I could see half that roster, the meaningful bits of half that roster, looking very different and probably not better. That typically doesn't go super well, does it, Zach?
No. I get flashes of Jerry Jones whenever I hear hands-on owner.
Do you think Cam Ward survives that, Tommy?
If not, I think he's got a shot somewhere else. The environment around Cam Ward is as bad as I have ever seen in any sort of number one overall situation. The question is, has that broken him? I don't think so, but I don't know how much longer he can hang in there in this environment. And so something's got to give. Either it's going to be his will, or he's going to move, or they're going to make some significant changes and get lucky.
Go home, Cam Ward. Miami misses you. Go be on the Dolphins. Yeah. Let's be done
that'd
with
be nice. Stuff. Yeah.
Someone said, I heard this on like the three shows I listened to on my hiatus, but someone said the Cardinals and the Dolphins should trade quarterbacks, and that almost makes sense to me. That Tua should go to the Cardinals and Kyler should be a Dolphin.
Since I'm not sure that.
And the money almost makes sense.
I'm not sure the Cardinals fans would be very excited about Tua, who needs to get the ball out quick, throwing to
Marvin Harrison.
Need to go down the field. Yeah, I don't know how that would. I don't know, but
it was just a fun thought. All right, season minor news. We can burn through all of these and then discuss it if anyone wants to. Ja'Marr Chase is suspended one game. I said this could drive a lot with Burrow coming back. I know he wants to come back, but man, if they lose this week, I don't know why you'd bring him back. They're going to be like 3-9 or something like that. Aaron Rodgers doesn't need surgery for the wrist injury. He's pushing to play week 12 against the Bears, and I put in parentheses, duh. Of course he's trying to play against the Bears. He wants one more shot at that. Jacobs doesn't need surgery but could miss week 12. Stroud's out week 12. Lane Johnson, Liz Frank injury, out 4 to 6 weeks. I don't normally put O-linemen on there, but that's a real one to say to he's out for 4 to 6 weeks. And to show how much I care about this, I put him below the offensive lineman. Shedeur Sanders is expected to start with Dylan Gabriel in the concussion protocol this week. Holy cow, that looks terrible. His threw right to the Ravens' corners.
Can we go back and talk about the offensive lineman instead of
literally
hey now.
So bad.
But
and it's just
but again, like I know that like the pre-draft zeitgeist is surprised by this. Mm-hmm. This should not be a surprise. Like he dropped not just because he was a cheesehead, but also because he was not very good. Mm-hmm. There was a really big hype machine propping him up, but he's not very good, and he hasn't been very good when he's played. He was terrible in the preseason. He's not very good. Like I never cheer against players, like ever. I want him to succeed, but it's really hard to see. It's really hard to see Shedeur Sanders improving on his big flaws from college were he doesn't get the ball out quickly and he backs up when he's facing pressure.
Yes. And he did both of those on that pick.
That's what he does. So like my write-up of Shedeur Sanders, my opening was in less than 3 seconds, Americans consume 1300 cheeseburgers. In less than 3 seconds, Michael Jordan makes $7.50 from Nike royalties. In 2.4 seconds, Velocicoaster at Universal accelerates to 70 miles an hour and then drops you over the 140-foot top hat. I feel like that's what Shedeur's going to do. But when Shedeur Sanders gets the ball out of his hands in less than 3 seconds, good things happen. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen often. Mm-mm. And so I summed it all up saying, Sanders probably goes early in the draft, but in order for him to be successful, he needs to get the ball out early and consistently. He may not be racing Raptors, but it doesn't take very long for NFL pass rushers to find their prey, and they are pack hunters.
Mm-hmm. Baltimore showed that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
Baltimore is going to consider.
Go ahead, Tommy. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Here's how I consider these types of profiles. You add up how many anticipated starts you think they're going to have, right? And you compare between different profiles, right? So you could say, all right, let's look at Joe Flacco. How many starts do I think I can get out of him until he is no longer in the NFL, right? Can I get a half dozen more starts out of Joe Flacco, right? Maybe. It's more likely that I get 6 starts out of Flacco than I do Sanders.
Yeah.
So probably the wise move, if you're using these players for points, which you probably should be, is to move into Flacco. And then you look at another player like Anthony Richardson. Do I think that they're good? I don't think so. Maybe he could be good for fantasy, not for the NFL. I'm not taking that conversation that way. But someone who can run, who's had a chance to sit and reset for a year, who's going to go through a offensive coordinator car wash probably in the offseason, in the non-point scoring season, I could see better outcomes, more starts in the future for Anthony Richardson. And so that's how I want to do it, is do I need starts now, get the really old guys who are playing, or do I want to make a bet on a better profile that is probably going to run a little bit more? Then I'll figure out what it takes on either side to get into Richardson.
I mean, I can't believe you would poo-poo Shedeur Sanders as a runner with his negative 127 yards on 211 carries in college. That's like a perfect example. Getting into Richardson, getting into Fields, like somebody like that with the potential huge upside if they play, as opposed to somebody who you don't want them to play because the upside goes away with Sanders when he's on the field. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden the mystery's gone. People aren't like potentially excited about him because now they've seen it.
Yep. Exactly. Spencer Rattler, another one. I'd move into Spencer Rattler.
I think the long story short is the Browns have 2 first-round picks. They're getting a quarterback with one of them, I feel like. So there's no dynasty value here unless you got to ride out someone to get through the rest of the season. Okay. So we normally do have the guests decide trades and listener questions. We're going to do trades first because there's only two. And then we'll do questions and Thanksgiving debates at the end. So first, trade X leagues are 12 teams, super flex, PPR, tight end premium with 1.75 per tight end reception and 0.05 per return yard in all leagues except TA1, and we don't have any TA1. So the first one is a blockbuster of Pat Bryant for Marshawn Lloyd. Zach, this was me and Tommy, so you have to talk first.
I think I'd rather have Lloyd. there you go. What does the pie in the sky upside for Pat Bryant look like? And do you think he ever gives you a 1 week like wide receiver one? Because like Lloyd, if he gets in, could be a 1 week wide receiver running back one. Like that. That's it. That's all I'm looking at. I don't think that there's anything more than a week here that I care about.
Tommy, why did you ask me for Marshawn Lloyd?
Yeah. So in this format, you only have to start one of each position, yep. Right? And so I'm trying to construct my roster to be extremely running back heavy and extremely tight end heavy, trying to capture those spot starts. And I was just playing base rates. You know, if you look at a third round running back this far into Lloyd's career, you've got about a 12% chance of having a sustained top 24 season in any point in the rest of his career, much less those captured starts that you were talking about, Zach. If you look at Pat Bryant, who I believe is a third round wide receiver,
yes.
It's like 2 or 3%. And so I think I know when to start him a little bit more clearly. I think there may be opportunity coming up with Josh Jacobs being dinged up. What if Marshawn Lloyd is magically healthy? That would be a dream come true.
They said they might designate him, by the way, this week.
Yeah.
Return. So.
And so can I play the ladder game? You know, can I use the rung of Pat Bryant to get to Marshawn Lloyd, to get to something else, to get to what I actually want? Also, we needed content for the show, and
I literally was about to say that. I did none of that math. I saw this was in my inbox from like last week when I wasn't really paying attention. I was going through doing waivers before the show, and I saw that. I'm like, sure, why not? We can talk about the show. And we can talk about Marshawn Lloyd and Pat Bryant because everyone wants to hear that. Okay. TA9. This is the big one, and I'm actually very excited to hear where you two sit on this. Neighbors for Lamb, straight up. Tommy?
All right, so let's go back to how many weeks you're buying. What are we in, week 12 now?
You're entering week 12.
So we got 5 more weeks, yes. Right? And so what is the cost of 5 20-point games to you? I think that's the conversation that's worth having, right? Neighbors is my wide receiver one overall. If we offered this deal...
Wow. Yeah. I like that.
He has been for a while. Going into the season, he was my wide receiver one overall. You look at the profile and it is Justin Jefferson like. It's incredible, right? And I want to get into those as frequently as possible. If we tried to make this deal in like week five, it's a bad deal, right? You don't do this. You don't give up CeeDee Lamb and all of those weeks of production for Malik Nabers. We're at a point now where, like, if at your best you're getting a handful of weeks, very likely you're only getting a couple. And so I would do this deal to get Nabers pretty comfortably, contender, rebuilder, somewhere in the middle. Not much hesitation. I love the structure of this. I love why someone might offer it. I think it's really smart and fair and fun. What do you think, Zach?
I think that people think CeeDee Lamb's older than he is.
What is he, 26?
26. He'll be 27 in April.
Yeah.
And so, yes, Nabers probably is dynasty value higher. Production-wise, pretty similar. Nabers, in theory, has a longer career ahead of him because he's a couple years younger.
We'll see. Right?
But yeah, but we don't know that. And to get CeeDee Lamb, I assume, on a contending team, like, that is worth, to me, trading Malik Nabers. I mean, it's exactly what Tommy talked about. What are the five games of 20 points worth to you? Well, if you end up winning a championship, then it's gravy. If you don't, you haven't set yourself any further behind the eight ball than you were, you know, with Nabers. You know, maybe you set yourself further behind the eight ball in 4 years, 5 years, but, like, man, I'm not thinking that far ahead. Like, my dynasty teams in 3 years are almost completely changed. So what, like, why not? Why not take those points? Why not go for it now? Because I don't think you're hurting yourself. The only place you're potentially hurting yourself is trade value in the future, you know, with Nabers.
Well, let me ask you this then, Zach, because what we're buying is 5 weeks, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since we only have to start one wide receiver, if you have a strong wide receiver, just one strong wide receiver, you need to reconfigure the math a little bit in my mind. Sure. You need to ask yourself the question, can I get 17 points per game cheaper somewhere else, right? Yeah. Can I get close enough cheaper where I can also hold on to this, what I think is very elite asset, something tangibly better than CeeDee Lamb? That can be up for debate. I fully recognize that. But there are other considerations around this with the flexibility of the lineup settings that I think need to come into consideration.
Well, and also with a league like TA, my initial pivot, and this is going to be a huge surprise, would be tight end.
Yeah.
Would be go try to pull Jake Ferguson from somebody. Would be to go try to pull Dallas Goedert for cheap from somebody. Like, that's what I would be trying to do instead of give up. You know, if I don't have to give up Nabers, sure. But, like, the trade in a vacuum, like, man, getting Lamb for him, I'm okay with. But I agree, Tommy, that if we're going to league specific, if we're going to actually look at this the way you would approach your team in this league, not just this trade, I would pivot. I still think, as smart as everybody is who's in a TA league, I still think tight ends are undervalued.
Yep. And that's not to say you can't trade for CeeDee Lamb using your Nabers and go get Jake Ferguson. That's still an option as well, you know? Yeah.
Tommy, since you have Nabers wide receiver one, does it scare you at all for the Giants to take someone in 2026? Because that's going to happen between now and Nabers scoring points again. Let's say, like, it's not going to be a first round guy because there's a bunch of big tackles coming.
You asked the wrong guy. There's a string on the back of Zach's neck, and if you pull it, he'll tell you a story about wide receiver ones on teams.
Yeah. Look, good players make, like, better offenses. We want good offenses, and Neighbors is going to get his. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how it is. I mean, you look at all of the other – how affected is Ja'Marr Chase because he's got T. Higgins?
Yep.
The counter argument is how effective is Lamb by Pickens, because he's outscored him twice in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen because Pickens is a deep ball guy, is an air yards guy, and that's fine. But like, man, it's I would much rather have a player in a good offense than I would a player that's not on a good offense. I mean, it's the whole. I mean, I've talked about this a ton, but I always go back to four teams every year on average have two top 24 wide receivers, mm-hmm. which means that there are 12 teams that don't have a top 24 wide receiver.
Yeah.
So I don't care if you're a wide receiver one and your team is bad, like, or you're bad. Like, yeah. I want a good offense. I want good receivers.
To take it further, I would rather have two great wide receivers on a bad offense than one great wide receiver on a bad offense.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes offense better.
This is not shade to Baker Mayfield, but last year he had two of the best wide receivers in football that he was throwing to, and it helped him. Like, I don't think it's offensive to say that it helped Baker Mayfield to have excellent wide receivers, right? It elevated the entire offense. If it was just Mike Evans, would we see the same results? I have doubts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree, I'm not saying, you know, Carnell Tate or Jacoby Lane's going to take Neighbors off the field, but
if Baker didn't have Evans or Godwin, they might even lose to the Patriots. Just hypothetically.
Yeah, Patriots are already back, which is just annoying.
Can I ask you real quick?
Yeah,
is Drake May a kingmaker?
Big question.
What's your kingmaker? I think maybe it's like a combination of he's pretty good. The offense, and you hate to give Josh McDaniel credit, but like the offense is really well designed, and throwing in Stephon Diggs doesn't hurt at all.
He's been awesome.
Well, and so like. To me, the two wide receivers that you can point to that have like noticeably changed their quarterback's futures have been Stephon Diggs, who, you know, was great in Minnesota, was great in Buffalo. And then the other receiver who is, you know, you talk about kingmakers, receiver kingmakers, is Noah Brown. Noah Brown was there with Dak in 2017. He was there with Stroud in 2023. He was there with Jaden Daniels in 2024. That's your kingmaker. But no,
it's your excuse for 2025 because he's still there.
But yeah, well, I mean, Daniels is hurt. It's not an exact science, but no, like Drake May is really good, and Drake May, that was a really fun class because you had three quarterbacks in that class, and then you had a whole bunch of other players, but like. Like it was for me, Daniels, Williams, May. I may have been like may be better suited to the NFL, not turning his back than Williams. It's close. I know Hogue doesn't like the running quarterbacks, but I still think fantasy wise, Jaden Daniels. I still think fantasy wise, Lamar Jackson. They're their own thing.
Agreed.
My concern with May. And you've seen it a couple times this year, is he hangs in the pocket so darn long.
Yep.
And it's like, it's nice. He's the football guy. You know, he'll sit there and he'll take a shot in his face and throw the ball. I don't want him to do that. I don't want him to run and do the Josh Allen thing where he's like, oh, I can get an extra 4 yards and jump up. And like, I don't want you to do that. Like, he's been great downfield. They've got a really safe offense for him to play in. Like I watched the game the other night, and he's just dinking, dunking, like picking receivers, taking checkdowns, hitting the tight end, handing the ball off. Trevion Henderson's gone. Like it's beautiful. It's fun. I think Drake May is really good, but I think you're seeing the confluence of Josh McDaniels has done this before. Stephon Diggs has done this before. And it's making May, giving May like a soft spot to perform, to play well.
With AJ Brown on the way.
Yeah.
I think that May is the next big fantasy asset.
Yeah, it feels like it.
There's a good shot that he is. We're having conversations this time next year of Josh Allen versus Drake May.
Which is crazy. Because we did that with Daniels. Like
this feels deserved though. The Daniels stuff was, I mean, very good. Not denigrating at all. Mm-hmm. This feels different, more sustainable with May. And getting out in front of it now feels like a pretty wise move. You know, because we have this tier of quarterbacks that are approaching or turning 30. And that, from a value standpoint, you talked about value a little bit, Zach. That's a death knell for maintaining that elite level value. The production, I mean, it's there for six more years probably. But if you want to be in the market, having May over some of these quarterbacks that are pushing into their 30s, that's going to be more liquid for you at similar production levels.
And especially because we haven't had the influx. Like we've had a lot of really good quarterbacks retire and get done, and we haven't had the influx of really good quarterbacks come in. And so it's a really interesting it's an interesting spot for May. I mean, he's what, QB2 on the season, 3 on the season, something like that. And it does look sustainable. I hope that they can keep Josh McDaniels around for at least a few more years before he goes and, you know,
it's another head coaching job.
Yeah. Because I really do think that a lot, like, this is not to take anything away from Drake May, and it's not calling him a system quarterback. Every quarterback's a system quarterback. But, like, Josh McDaniels has really allowed May to thrive on some really easy throws. And then he's hit the tough throws that he needs to make as well. Like, that part's on May, but, like, man, a lot of it and keeping the chains moving, that's a McDaniels design for sure.
But that's what made the early 2000s quarterbacks great. And if we're to talk about the cyclical nature of the NFL and the quarterback position, that's the next iteration, is the guys who do what May is doing well, who seem to always have the easy throw at their disposal, who check into the easy throw. And May has proven, yes, the athletic abilities, that was what was enticing on the front end, right? But now we're seeing things that really signal that, like, yeah, there's something else here that is going to be desirable 5 years from now, very likely.
I am so ready for the reincarnation of Gio Bernard and James White and all the pass-catching running backs. And I'm ready.
And jokes aside, if AJ Brown goes to the Patriots, Drake May hike will be nuclear at that point. I mean, he'll be number one QB just on hype alone. But it's going to be interesting, and this is why I love you two. We started at Neighbors versus Lamb like 15 minutes ago, and
sorry about that, Frank.
No, I love it. That's why I love the tangents that we all go on this. So, no, I love it. All right, let's get to Dynastud's questions. With Bucky on the way back, does Sean Tucker's monster game change his value significantly for you? If you had a share, what would you be willing to deal him for? Tommy, you can start this one.
There are 50 Sean Tuckers out there, right? So have as many of those as you can cram onto your roster. Mm-hmm. Use them. You know, they don't matter unless they hit your lineup, mm-hmm. right? And so make sure that you have enough spaces to use them. And that means consolidation. That means liquidation. That means moving into injured profiles like Marshawn Lloyd. I think that that's a decent move to make, is to take Tucker and turn him into Lloyd, or Tucker and turn him into Kendre Miller, right? And clear space for the next incoming running back that is going to have a few spot starts. Yep. If you take care of the future at the running back position, it takes care of the present. right? And you have to do it at volume. You can't do this with 25% of your roster allocated to the position. For me, it has to be like 55 or 60 or 65% of my entire roster has to be made up of these players. And people will say, well, you're just getting lucky. Yes, you're creating this environment of luck. And Sean Tucker is a manifestation of that, isn't he, Zach?
Absolutely. It's not luck. It's not luck. It's roster construction. And for most people, you have to feel uncomfortable with the number of running backs that you roster. Like you have to get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. You have to get comfortable looking and going, I am struggling to fill receivers with bye weeks because
Yes.
those receivers don't matter. What matters is, hey, I got a running back one, the running back one, a running back 1 week from Sean Tucker. I got a running back 1 week from Kenny Gainwell. I got a running back 1 week from Devin Singletary. Bashul Tootin is doing some things. Like this is why you roster construct the way you do. This is why, and again, it's why zero RB works, but you don't even have to be playing zero RB to roster construct this way. That's the other piece of this is you can build your starting lineup however you want it, but your bench with those running backs, the ability to elevator up to a running back 1 week and know that they're starting, so you know they're getting volume. It's worth having the roster spot, and it's not worth having the back end tight end. It's not worth having the back end wide receiver, even if you think he was good, even if he's a darling, you know, a draft darling, even if I loved Ricky White, you know, on film, he doesn't matter anymore because he didn't get draft capital and he's not going to get playing time. And if he does get playing time, he's not going to produce the way Sean Tucker did. And so, like, you have to understand, you know, how the positions function and how the positions function on your roster and in your starting lineup.
And I don't want to hear that not in my league, because if you are diligent with this, if you acquire third and fourth round rookie draft picks, you can build into a heavy RB construction. A good rule of thumb is three running backs for every one wide receiver you have. If you're really humming, you're over four. And I think that's the sweet spot, is around four running backs per wide receiver. You and I, Zach, like, this is the first time we've ever actually played in a league together, was this season. I picked up an abandoned team and I was rebuilding, man. I still did this strategy and it still works for rebuilders, doesn't it? Just because you're rebuilding, it doesn't mean you should abandon this build, because it takes forever to get into if you're not diligent about it. You just trade from the position and reconstruct the tiers of assets, not necessarily the quantity of assets. It's you're moving value around through the positions, but using running back as sort of that spark, aren't you?
Yeah, and again, it's points, like points value, it's future value. So like in the rookie draft, when you talk about, you know, third and fourth round picks, I'm just looking at this past year. Jaden Blue was a early third, Devin Neal, Dylan Sampson, Trevor Etienne, Ollie Gordon, Taj Brooks, James Jordan, Woody Marks. Like, but now all of a sudden, like, Woody Marks has already produced some. You've seen this already happen, and if you get that movement, if you get those points, all of a sudden now there's fungibility to move them for something else that you really want. So again, it's both points and the ability to move them because they will score points. It's they're such great, they're coins. They're such great game pieces to have because there is a predictability in when they're going to play. I mean, it's not predictable in, like, I don't know that in week seven Woody Marks is going to play well, but I know that at some point during the year, Woody Marks is going to play, or the 15 other guys that are Woody Marks, you know, they're going to get a shot. They're going to play, you know, Sean Tucker's going to play. And I often go back and look at the top like six or seven or eight running backs that I have in a class and go see what guys I can acquire cheaply.
Yes.
And I go back to this often, but like after Kyren Williams' rookie year, I went and acquired a bunch of Kyren Williams because he was my running back two in that class. Did I think he was going to take over the backfield and be a top five running back? No. But did I think he was going to have a couple of weeks where he was going to produce? Yes. And so like continue to do that, continue to mine those weeks, mine those players who have potential, and you may end up getting more than what you bargained for.
Yeah, exactly, Zach. And this gets into Dynastud's other question. I think we should do this in a two-pronged way, if that's okay with you,
yeah,
Frank. I'm gonna ask you. So Dynastud was asking, which thus far mediocre running back do we think could be 2025's out of nowhere league winner?
I was just looking at names for this.
Yeah, like we could, I'll start with you, Zach. Like we could pull from, I think, the rookies. And then I'm just struck by Amir Abdullah last year. Really like dingy vet that won championships. He had like 29 points or something in a traditional PPR format championship week. So could you give us a few options, Zach, for rookies that maybe haven't yet popped? I've got some ideas as well. I can clean up if you miss any, and then maybe a vet or two as well.
I mean, easy off the top of the head, Ollie Gordon. I know that I talked to Frank about Ollie. I said in our hot take show, I said Ollie Gordon,
which we stunk at, by the way, this year.
We're okay that we got out of the Jets one because there were injuries.
Yes,
but I still think first 7 weeks we looked pretty good.
We looked great.
So Ollie Gordon, in Miami, like, and he's been fantastic. Even the last couple weeks, he's seen a little more run. I still think LaQuint Allen is a really talented running back. I really do. I think he's even better than Bashaul Tootin.
He is.
Tootin's been good, but like, man, LaQuint Allen is good. I like Taj Brooks. I think a couple of the backs from the last class. So I think Blake Corum is still a really good option.
He's sneaky. I think he can work.
I think Ray Davis is still a really good option. He may be 45 now. He's getting up there in age, but like, he still doesn't have a lot of carries in the NFL, and he's very similar to Cook. So it's not a one for one, but it would be pretty close if Cook decided to take a vacation to Tahiti. Like, so those are the types of players that I am looking at. And I know that there was a kind of another question about like the backups and playoffs and insurance and running backs.
Yeah.
So a couple names that maybe we could tack on.
Yeah.
Trevor Etienne.
Yeah.
I love the Carolina Panthers run scheme. I was talking about it last year, how I loved it. You see nothing but success, right? You see a pass catching profile, right? Someone who can shoulder a decent amount of carries as well. And so if the injury carousel stops at Carolina, what's to say Etienne couldn't, with the fourth round draft capital, like really strong rookie running back draft capital, he could certainly be a league winner down the stretch. I know Phil Maffa, Dallas Cowboys seventh round rookie running back, is not your cup of tea, Zach, but early training camp into the preseason, it was really, really encouraging that maybe Maffa could not only like be active, but have a significant role in that Cowboys offense. A completely different type of running back than what they're currently using, at least from my uneducated eye. If Javonte Williams has any sort of, short-term absence, I could see Maffa stepping in at the end of the year. Jaden Blue seems to be inconsistent, which I actually like. I like the idea that he's inconsistent because that means that there's a ceiling that they want to capture but aren't able to yet. I like the upside of that at the cost that it takes to get him right now.
He is wild. Like, he's so talented and, like, you just, who knows? Man, he's talented.
Breshard Smith, the Kansas City Chiefs running back, he's more of a pass catcher in my mind than a runner.
Yep.
Yeah, and he gives a speed element to the offense that I think would be really intriguing. The Chiefs have a way of reinventing themselves down the stretch. And so I could see that being something where it's like, where the hell did he come from? I thought he was bad. And it's like, oh, no, he's getting 11 touches a week now and he's awesome. You know? Frank, do you have any like salty vets that maybe we could take a look at and just sort of stash on the end of our rosters?
Not on the end of your rosters, but someone you can go buy low right now. Jets, Bengals, Steelers, Bengals. That is the next four games for Mr. Derrick Henry.
Mm,
how is the time
this week
to go get him?
Yeah.
The Yeti is coming, as the footballers would say. We're about to enter his season. And it's time to go trade. Yeah, Tommy trading for a second, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Yep.
Russ,
pay more than a second for Derrick Henry right now.
Russ, J. Mike, if you're listening, in Olympians, Henry will be available
yes.
for this stretch run. Him. Yeah, come get him.
Yeah.
You're not talking to me. I am the sixth seed on points right now.
Yeah. You're yeah.
Yeah, no, that's my main guy, I think, to go get. In terms of veterans, I get stuck on like Spears and Pollard just because they're on such a bad offense, but you know, one of them's got to do well at some point.
Kenny Gainwell, Chris Rodriguez, both really strong options.
Sounds like Warren's okay. I didn't put him in the news because of that reason, but it sounds like he's fine. So I'm not totally buying Gainwell, but man, if Warren's out, you've seen it before. He's doing it.
But he doesn't cost you anything. Like Gainwell, nobody wants Kenny Gainwell. Right. Until Kenny Gainwell is playing. And then you're like, oh, man, I wish I had Kenny Gainwell.
You can go try and trade for Vidal again because, you know, we don't know about – like, there has been nothing on Hampton recently. They said he might come back after the bye, and I know they're in bye, but if Vidal's still the guy, you get a couple more weeks of points for basically nothing.
Really ugly, Zamir White, like way down the ranks.
Yeah.
He's the RB2, assumedly. Yeah. If Ashton Jeanty were to go down.
Is it him or Mostert?
Who cares? I think Zamir White would get enough that it would be worth your while to start him in a lot of lineups.
One more on the Broncos, Tyler Bidet.
Yeah, love it.
Because I think McLaughlin, pick one, whoever you want. They're both going to probably get work because Harvey can't shoulder it up. So, yeah, that's my main ones. But, yeah, go get Derrick Henry.
Good call, Frank.
Looking at schedules as we were reading through these. All right, so we said backups, insurance. We did that one kind of. How worried are we that the Chargers' offensive line injuries just handicapped the entire offense rest of the season? Herbert coming off his worst two games of the season. He seems fine, by the way. I know he kind of limped around on Sunday, and they're going in their bye. I think they need a bye. And stat spread across too many weapons for any individual receiver to smash. It's just like a Tommy Data question.
Yeah, we were talking about kingmakers. Herbert is the kingmaker, in my opinion. He elevates all of his pass catchers. He has his entire career. Josh Palmer is good with Justin Herbert. If you can make Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston good, you can make anybody good. And so that's what gives me hope for Trey Harris down the stretch. This is the time of year when we see rookies start to ascend. And Keenan Allen is old man good, right? But his role is pretty defined, right? He can't grow in his role right now. Quentin Johnston, I think, is kind of similar, locked into his role, right? And so if this offense is going to evolve with a fading offensive line, I could see more first read target share going to Harris. I'm concerned, though. I don't know how you couldn't be. Two potential all-pro left tackles have gone down on this offense. Justin Herbert is mortal, even though he's, you know, got the body of a god. You know, he's like, if you were to build a quarterback, it would be Justin Herbert in my mind. But yeah, I'm concerned. Are you concerned, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, he got beaten around last game and only threw 18 passes. So that, like, that's not great.
Zero yards in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's Trey Lance came in and had a better quarterback rating. So that, I mean, full stop. But also, it's Justin Herbert. Like, they're going to regroup. They're going to figure something out, whether it's, you know, like changing the, like shoring up the offensive line, trying to figure out how they're going to work through that, or it's getting the ball out quicker. Again, like, there are ways to get around it. They may end up running a lot more. Who knows? Like, that's it. They're just, there are going to be ways to get around that offensive line. And if there is a quarterback in the NFL who can do that, you've seen Justin Herbert be really good for a very long time. Now, is he going to throw 45 times a game? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. Like, that's what has been so good about him. It's why things were so bleak last year. And it's why things have been pretty good again this year, is because he's, again, throwing the ball again.
This is why following John Hogue's QBX philosophy is so useful, because you can shelve Justin Herbert late in the year, where if you had, you know, two elite quarterbacks, you're kind of stuck playing this guy, right? Or trading to get somebody else at a probable premium to get even a short-term solution. And so the QBX strategy, where you have five quarterbacks and you play matchups, you don't have allegiance to any single quarterback except maybe Josh Allen. You have to bench even the good players. And being able to bench Herbert this time of year is a luxury, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's such a brilliant strategy. Again, if you can pull it off, to be able to, at the premium position in a super flex league, to be able to have options.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a luxury. But the other piece of that is, not only do you have options, do you have that luxury, but you're also taking that away from your opponents. So you're gaining and they're losing. It's
tough to see in August and September. It's tough to see that advantage quite yet, right? And so it becomes more known. It's almost the anti-fragility component. Even though you're adding a lot of volume and a lot of value to the position, you're creating fragility on your opponents. You're making them spend more fab. You're doing a lot of things that really force hands this time of year. And I don't know about you, Frank, but like, my lineups, my rosters, they're thin in some positions, right?
Yeah.
They're fading in some positions. And I don't want to have my hand forced in any direction, because I need as much optionality as I can get right now.
No, I agree. And I was just looking at Herbert's schedule to see if you should go be buying a quarterback if he's like your QB2 or QB1. And yeah, you probably should, because he plays the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Texans in the final 5 weeks.
Yeah. So,
and the Texans in the fantasy championship if you go. So it's going to be hard. And on the bright side, he plays Dallas in week 16 if you make it that far.
There you go.
He might score 50. All right. Let's get to the real stuff. The most important discussion of the evening. Thanksgiving foods. So my question this week was Thanksgiving foods. Rocky's not here, so this is why we get to do this. Like, favorite side, favorite thing. When I asked if turkey's overrated, and Dynastud's answer was, anyone who says turkey is overrated is making their turkey wrong, and I pity them. Okay, tough start. The answer to the best Thanksgiving food, however, is pretty much all of them. Excellent holiday spread, 10 out of 10, no notes, would recommend. So he's gone to the school of Zach Reed, where the answer
is. Oh, sign, yeah.
Yeah. So, is turkey overrated? Let's start there. I say yes. That's why I wrote it. My family loves turkey on Thanksgiving.
I mean, so here's the question, though, Frank. You say overrated. How many times a year do you have turkey?
None. That's why I think why should today be that? I get the history of it, but why should I be forced to have it then?
Well, I mean, you're not forced to have it, but it's kind of a novelty. And again, if you, and I'm not saying you're cooking it poorly, but like,
no, I get it.
I enjoy turkey. You especially dark meat. Like, mm-hmm. if you give me a leg, give me a thigh. Like, I like dark meat turkey. I think there's a lot of flavor. You throw a little bit of gravy on it.
That, you know, right there. You just said it. That's why turkey is overrated, because you have to put stuff on it.
Well, I mean, that's so many foods are like that, though.
Yeah,
right? Fine. Like, think about
none of it is put on the pedestal that turkey is put on.
You ever just take a steak and just like throw it on the grill without seasoning it?
Is that the same thing as gravy, though?
But it's just a help. It is. I mean, like, it's not, again, it's the ensemble. I don't think it's overrated, but I also don't, like, I'm not going to go to the mattress for turkey. Like, it's good. I think it has its place on the Thanksgiving table, but, like, I would be a lot less upset about not having. You know what? I take that back. I actually have firsthand experience. So growing up, we used to have a huge family Thanksgiving. We'd all go to my grandmother's. So my mother had two brothers and a sister. They all had children. So we would have like full 11-on-11 family football game. Like it was legit. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So there were 37 people that would go to Thanksgiving. One year, my mother's sister, her family are vegetarians. One year we did not have turkey. We had pesto. I like pesto. I refused to eat pesto at Thanksgiving. We didn't have turkey. We didn't have stuffing. And like,
pesto on what? Just flat pasta?
Yeah, pesto on pasta. And again, I'll eat pesto on pasta all day, but not on Thanksgiving. On Thanksgiving, I want my turkey. And look, if you want to cook a ham on Thanksgiving, more power to you. Do it.
Like, so my family does beef tenderloin.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, I'm not gonna tell you that like you're wrong. Like, you don't have to have turkey. Like, you're never gonna hear me yuck somebody's yum. Yes. Like, whatever makes you happy, do it. But also, like, man, I like a good plateful of dark meat turkey. Throw a little stuffing on the beside it. Yes. You know, ladle the gravy over some peas, some carrots, some squash. That's where I'm gonna hit you, squash.
Before I let Tommy go, hang on. I have one thing is that the beef tenderloin came from just the turkey not being a thing. And the reason that I brought this up is, unlike Zach, and I think Tommy might go there too, is that there are people who are like, you have to have it. How dare you not have turkey on Thanksgiving? I never understood that. So Tommy's floor is yours.
I'm glad you invited me on this week, Frank, so that somebody can bring reason to this podcast.
Oh, good.
I have turkey more than 12 times a year. More than I have chicken.
Oh, this is good. We have all spectrums. I like this.
I cook turkey more than I cook chicken. Turkey is fantastic. It's great fried. It's great baked. It's a versatile bird that people just don't understand how to cook. Mm-hmm. Or they cook it one way once a year. They don't have to think about it. It's an easy button thing. And because of that, it gets shit on. And that's totally unfair. It is a magnificent meal to have in July. There's nothing that says it's a fall meal. That's ridiculous. It's cheap year round. You get a lot of meat for what you're buying. You can be intentional about the meals. It downcycles really, really well. Who doesn't like turkey soup? Turkey soup is amazing. Turkey sandwiches are maybe the best thing about Thanksgiving, right? When you get the stuffing, you get the cranberry sauce, you put some jalapenos and some mustard. Like, I love adding.
I'm going to Tommy's house for possible. Thanksgiving.
It's amazing. All right, here's the thing. That's not even the best part of my Thanksgiving. I make a dish called pie cakin, where I put a pecan pie inside of a cake. Yes. It is so moist. It is so delicious. It is so rich that I think that is the crown jewel. The only time of the year I make pie cakin is on Thanksgiving. So that is like our family high holiday is pie cakin day. You know,
he went John Madden, but better. Boom.
The desserts are the best part of Thanksgiving, in my opinion. Turkey's good. That's great. But like, When you do the family style thing that you're talking about, Zach, and people all bring dishes, like there's the house that does all the staples, right? And then someone does the bird and that kind of thing. It's the desserts where you get things that you don't have all the time. Like someone's really good at making, I don't know, brownies or whatever. And so you get their brownies once a year. You get a certain type of pie that just takes forever to make. You know, that's the stuff that's really great, in my opinion.
You must rock a Friendsgiving, Tommy.
Like,
oh, I love it.
You must be the most popular dude at a Friendsgiving.
We're doing it tomorrow at work. Yeah. I have pie cake and ready to rock.
So, okay. So I'm still struggling with pie cake. And so a cake is layers, right? So is the pecan pie like in the frosting layer? Is it like in between the cake pieces? Like walk me through pie cake.
It's in between the cake pieces. So you make the pie for, you have to like cook the pie completely first. And then you,
oh
yeah.
And then stack layers.
Yeah. Then you stack layers and then you finish them off Lord. Together. You finish them off together where it's like, it's not quite cooked yet. You get it all in there and then you cook it together and it makes everything super moist.
Yeah. This is what you get on the Trade Addicts pod, folks.
It is so good. If anybody wants to, learn how to make pie cake in at FF Tommy B, it might be the most, valuable reason to ever reach out to me on socials.
Oh, so I think we've really hit the stride of this group because so like you're pie caking. If I'm being invited to a Thanksgiving or a Friendsgiving, like, and I know this is going to be a lot of people have bad squash. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have bad squash. Uh-huh. Okay. My wife before she and I got married hated squash. So I do squash two ways, and a lot of people ruin it. A lot of people do butternut squash, and they do either they roast it off and they mash it up like potato, and you have it, and it's a little stringy, it's a little watery, it's fine, whatever. It's got good flavor. It's got the pumpkin pie spices. It's got nutmeg. It's got cloves and whatever, a little cinnamon. But I don't do that with my butternut squash. What I do with my butternut squash is I roast it off and then I make a soup. Okay. So I got butternut squash. That's butternut squash and cream and all of those spices. And like you cook it with the cloves in it and then you strain it. Like that's incredible. That's what I bring. And it gets eaten every time. And then I will make, and this is one that people don't go do, buttercup squash is the one that you want to roast and mash. And I'll tell you what, you don't even have to roast it. This is the trick. Buttercup squash, they're the green ones. They're winter squash, right? They like, you see them in the grocery store, you're like, nah, I'm going to go get my butternut squash. No. Go pick out a nice buttercup squash. You go take a knife, you go about 5-6 times in the top to aerate it. You put it in a microwave safe bowl, put it in the microwave for like 25 minutes. It will steam itself and it also takes most of the moisture out. So instead of getting that runny, stringy squash, when you cut it open, you take the seeds out, you get the meat, and it is like perfect, like mashed potato texture. Put a few pads of butter in there, a little bit of nutmeg, a little bit of, you know, ground clove. Oh, sign me up all day. And that's how, so many people get their squash ruined because they're trying to do butternut squash as like a side with mashed potato. And again, stringy, soupy, runny, like no, buttercup squash is the one you want to do there. And butternut squash is the one you want to make a soup out of.
Yep.
Squash school. Here we are.
Over here taking notes, man.
Yeah. Seriously. I literally wrote down the timestamp of the episode so I can go back and listen to this. I don't have a lot to bring to the table here. I am the king of eating everything, but I literally married the cook, so I don't have to do it. So
that's the way to do it.
But you know, I'm always, so something in my family is we have this it's like scoopable cornbread. It's not actual like big thick cornbread, it's like scoopable cornbread.
Ooh.
It's kind of like a little bit liquidy and you mix it in with some stuff and some cranberries. That's peak right there. But I guess final thing, squash and I'm going to mess it up. Pie caking. There we go. Favorite side. Is it stuffing? Is it just right down the middle?
It's, for me, it's mashed potatoes and gravy. I could have it almost with every single meal. When you
in
get
the summer, apparently.
Gravy, oh, with like homemade gravy, not the packet stuff.
Yeah, of course.
You get the fluffy, buttery potatoes.
Yes.
It makes the meal, doesn't it? It sticks everything together, at least.
It does. You gotta. I have a little immersion blender that I like to get in. You can like really make things smooth. It's nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
What's your favorite, Zach? Is it squash, or is it? You can pick something else.
I mean, like.
You can say yes now. I said
That's where I'm at. Like my plate is going to be well represented.
Yes.
You know, I want everything on.
I didn't want yes to be the answer for the turkey takes, but now you can say yes.
It's like you know, and I've done this every year that I've been at some place that has the multiple desserts. So you go over and you just start taking pieces until you have a pie.
Yeah,
you know, that's how I operate. Do the same thing when I sit down at the table. I'm like, oh, we have turkey this year. Yes, I would love some pesto with my turkey. you know, I'll eat everything. The side that really brings it home to me, I feel like you've seen Ratatouille, mm-hmm. right? Where the food critic at the end, he eats the Ratatouille, and all of a sudden he's a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it is cranberry orange relish. My grandmother used to make cranberry orange relish. And like I have that, and I'm like, little kid at the kids' table at Graham Nett's house. Yeah. Like that's the one that takes me back.
If you guys don't know what to do with your leftovers, I have one more suggestion before we get out of here.
Do it.
The chimichanga.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, You essentially make a chimichanga in the traditional sense, but all of the ingredients are your Thanksgiving leftovers, and you fry that burrito.
I have the big burritos that specifically for that.
I've never seen Zach Reed so excited for anything said on this show. I just
picked them up today.
Yeah, and you pour gravy all over that thing, right? Yeah, fall in love with Thanksgiving, y'all. You're doing it.
Oh, it's number one holiday. No doubt about it. I'm down the middle stuffing mashed potatoes guy. I don't know if I can beat, you know, turkey chonga and pie cakin and all these other things. I'm going to Tommy's house one of these years. But now that we've made you all so very hungry, I hope everyone enjoys their late breakfast or their early lunch as they listen to this. That's going to be the end of our show. Another successful house party, gentlemen. Thank you both. Before we head out, everyone can drop their socials. Zach, you can start first.
I am at Tacit Assassin 13 on Blue Sky. Can I go real quick and
do it?
Fantasy Cares real quick?
Yes, yeah. I was going to do that, so please do it. You're going to do it better than me.
Okay, so that's where I'm at, is Fantasy Cares. Yes, there will be a Dynasty Dummies Rookie Hootenanny this year. Yes, I will be doing film notes for Fantasy Cares, but currently, right now, Fantasy Cares has the Scott Fish Bowl Playoff League starting. We have Giving Tuesday coming up, which is where we will choose charities that have somebody who is matching donations. Mm-hmm. And so when you give, we're going to match it, and they're going to match it. And so your donation is going to end up going so much further. And so we're going to do that for Giving Tuesday. And we also have ready for signups, 25 jerseys in 25 days. Woo! The Fantasy Cares Advent calendar, Russ, Scott, Bob Gilchrist, myself. Some days we're going to pop in every day, do a wheel, give away a jersey. It is so much fun. Make sure you have your notifications turned on for YouTube.
Because they go on it every day.
You never know. Yeah, you never know when it's going to happen. And so it's worth having that on. And also, just as a side note for me, I just got in contact with my local Toys for Tots representative, and I'm going to be able to set up a Toys for Tots buy. And we do this all over the country. Mm-hmm. We just did a couple weeks ago donations. We did $20,000 to different food banks. Will be the big Toys for Tots. You know, we're coming up on that time of year where, look, some people are not as fortunate as we are. We have disposable income that we're playing a foolish little game.
Yes.
Take just a fraction of that and do some good with it. And you know, to be able to make Christmas for people who may not otherwise have it to be able to feed people who are, you know, wouldn't otherwise be eating around this time of year. Like, those are the things that we're doing where it's tangible, because so often I think that, you know, Fantasy Cares and the donations, it's this great big idea, and you know, you don't actually see what's going on. This is the time of year where you see it, where it's tangible, where in a week I will be posting pictures of myself and my kids and their friends and the Marines and their kids buying out the toy section at the local toy store and donating that. And you're going to see a whole bunch of other people all around the country do that too. And so it's all possible because of you, all the people listening. The fantasy community is incredible. The growth that Scott Fishbowl and Fantasy Cares have had in the time that I've been around it. So, I mean, you're only talking 10 years. It's incredible. Went from raising $3,000 to raising $500,000. Like, it's incredible. A year. Like, it's so incredible. And that's because of you. That's because of everybody listening. It's because of the community. It's because of how many people are willing to put somebody else first and make a donation. And it's just awesome. Like, it is just awesome. I can't thank you enough. And like, it's the culmination of it. It's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Well said. Tommy, anything to add? Socials as well, where people can find you.
No, let's make it tough. If you want this pie cake and recipe, you got to earn it. I think leaving on the Fantasy Cares note is better. Perfect.
I won't even give our stuff. Y'all know what it is. So I'm going to reiterate it all. SFPL Playoff Mania is starting. Giving Tuesday. So for those who don't know when Giving Tuesday is, that's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So that'll be a week from basically yesterday when I put this out. And 25 days, 25 jerseys. If seeing Russ on camera for 25 straight days isn't enough for you, I don't know what else sells it. And they have their main shows, Recap for SFP on Tuesdays, Trivia Tuesday nights, and the Wednesday night hangout, which I'm sure we'll have some Thanksgiving discussions over the next couple of weeks. But
food? You think we'd talk food?
Yeah, just a little bit. On Zach's very eloquent note, as Russ Fisher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Frank. Good night, Tommy.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants.
Daddy's the best.
See ya.